All right, good morning. Today's daf is Nedarim daf Lamed Ches. We left off Lamed Ches Amid Aleph three lines into the Yamud. So the daf is going to begin with a discussion of how we know that Moshe Rabbeinu was a wealthy individual. We had alluded yesterday to the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was wealthy from the fact that he was able to teach. He taught Torah to Klal Yisrael without taking a fee, without taking a salary for teaching Torah, but we had alluded yesterday to the fact that he was independently wealthy. The Gemara today is going to begin with a discussion of how exactly we know that that Moshe was wealthy. It's then going to transition into a discussion of the various qualities that are required in order to be worthy of having a nevuah. And we'll see that one of the qualities that is required in order to have a nevuah is, in order to be a navi, is ashirus. And then we're going to show that that the status of being an ashir was written with regard to four individuals: to Moshe, Shmuel, Amos, and Yonah. And we'll bring Rayas as to each, how we know that each one was extremely wealthy. The Gemara, with respect to Moshe Rabbeinu, is going to actually prove that Moshe Rabbeinu had all of the qualities that that are required for Nevuah, namely that he was an Asher, he was a Chacham, he was an Anav, he was a Gibor. So the Gemara is going to go through all that. The Mishnah on the bottom of Lamed Ches Amid Aleph is going to continue with the discussion of the things that a person is allowed to do on behalf of his friend, even though his friend is mudar anah from him. So even though Shimon is not allowed to have anah from Reuven, there are certain things that Reuven is allowed to do to Shimon. We've been discussing this already over the last few days. The coming Mishnah is going to discuss the fact that Reuven can support Shimon's wife and kids, even though Shimon is not permitted to have anah from Reuven, and even though Shimon is mechuyav in supporting his own wife and kids. So we're going to discuss why, and then we're going to talk about whether or not Reuven can provide food for Shimon's animals. So let's say Shimon's not allowed enough from Reuven, Shimon owns animals. Is Reuven allowed to provide food for the animals? So the Mishnah is going to distinguish, well, it depends what kind of animal. If it's an animal that's tahar, that the owner is allowed to eat, then the answer would be no, because to the extent Reuven is feeding the animal, Shimon is benefiting, because the animal is getting fatter, meaning there's more meat, so when Shimon shechts it, he'll have more food to eat, so that's a prohibited type of hana. The Gemara is going to distinguish between that and the case of Behemah Tameya, where the animal is really made only to work. It's not made to eat, and in fact, you can't do anything with it after it dies. And therefore, the Mishnah says that maybe that might be different. So the Mishnah is going to cite a machlokas, whether you're allowed to support Shimon's animals, whether you're allowed to provide food for Shimon's animals. In either of these cases, the Gemara Mameis is going to discuss two interesting cases, one in which we debate whether a person is allowed to give his daughter over to a mudar hana in marriage. So let's say Reuven is mudar hana from Shimon, says Shimon's not allowed to have hana from him. Reuven has a daughter. Is Reuven allowed to give his daughter over to Shimon to take as a wife? So the Gemara is going to discuss that, and then the Gemara right before the Mishnah is going to discuss the situation where a person is madar b'no l'talmud Torah. So we'll see in Machlokas what exactly that means, but he took a neder regarding his son. Most understand that it means that his son's not allowed to have anah from him. Some say, most understand that he's not allowed to have anah from his son. Some say it means that his son's not allowed to have anah from him. With the certain types of minimal benefits, these insignificant benefits that we say the son is allowed to have from the father in that situation. We'll see whether we can apply that to a general case of modar hana or not. It'll depend how we learn the exact situation over there. So we'll see interesting discussion right before the end of today's daf, God willing. So says the Gemara, starting three lines down on Lamed Ches Amid Aleph, Samar Ravacha Bar Ada. Ravacha Bar Ada says, "My Ravan Eretz Yisrael Paskin LaHadim Psuka LaTalsa Psukin." They divide the following pasuk into three different psukim. So it says in the pasuk, so if you look down in the Torah Ora Shalem, the full pasuk reads, "Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Hini Anochi Boy Lecha Bava Anan, Bavor Yishma'am Bedabri Imach, Vagam Bechay Yaminu Liyolam, Vayagad Moshe Es Divrei Ha'am El Hashem." So they would break that pasuk into into three different psukim. So the Shita Mekubetzes just explains that we know that there used to be a minug in Eretz Yisrael to complete the cycle of Chamishei Chumshei Torah, not every year, but once every 3 years. And so it would make sense that we have the parshios that are what they are, right? But if you are completing the Chamishei Chumshei Torah only once every 3 years, it's obvious that you're not reading a complete parsha each week. And says the Shita Mekubetzes, it's also mistaber that if you're dividing the Torah, the Chamishei Chumshei Torah, into smaller increments, then it's also mistaber that each of the psukim may have been divided into smaller fragments of psukim. So this is an example, says the Shita Mekubetzes, of a situation where they may have divided in Eretz Yisrael. They divided this pasuk into three different psukim because they were on a cycle of completing the chumash that was three times as long as our cycle of completing the chumash every year. So says the Gemara Vayta, Amar Rav Chama bar Chanina, Lo Esher Moshe Elam Ipsilosan Shaluchos. That Moshe, how did Moshe get rich? We had said yesterday Moshe was independently wealthy. So wealthy, in fact, he was able to spend his life teaching Torah to Klal Yisrael and not take a salary for doing so. So Moshe Rabbeinu became rich from the psalos and shaluchos, from the remainder of the luchos, from the waste of the luchos. Shenemar, as it says in the pasuk, psalacha shnei luchos avanim karishonim, you should hew for yourself two luchos avanim karishonim, and the drasha that the Gemara makes is psulosan shalacha yehei. That the psoles of the psoles of the luchos should belong to you. The Rush explains that the luchos were hewn from not a regular tablet of stone, but rather from avanim tovos umargolios. The luchos were hewn out of a precious stone, and therefore the psoles of the luchos, the shards of the avanim tovos and the margolios from which the luchos were hewn, that fell off when Moshe Rabbeinu was psalacha, when Moshe Rabbeinu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu up on our Sinai, when the dibros were written into the luchos, they had to be chiseled in, so the psalas, the shards of the precious stone that fell off during this process, Moshe Rabbeinu got to keep. They were avanim tovos and margolios, therefore they were very, very expensive, and Moshe Rabbeinu became rich off of those. So says the Gemara, Amar Rav Yosi Brav Chanina, another drasha in this vein, Lo nitna Torah ela l'Moshe uluzaro. The Torah was only given originally to Moshe and his children, not to Klal Yisrael generally. A shocking statement, but Shenemar says in the pasuk, Ksav lecha psalacha. It said in the pasuk psalacha that we were already doresh, that psulas on shalacha yehei, that the psulas of the lucha should be specifically belonging to Moshe Rabbeinu. It also says ksav lecha, that you should write this shira, and therefore, just like mapsulasan shalacha, af ksavan shalacha, that just like the psolas of the lucha should be yours alone, and Moshe Rabbeinu became rich off of that psolas, so too the ksiva that we're talking about, the Torah that you are writing, should also be yours and yours alone. In other words, that the Torah belongs to Moshe Rabbeinu and his children, not to Klal Yisrael generally. However, we know obviously we do hold from the Torah, right? We live by the Torah, we abide by the Torah, we perform all the mitzvahs in the Torah. However, Moshe Nog ba Tavas Ayin, Moshe was very generous, v'nasna li Yisrael, and therefore gave the Torah over to Klal Yisrael, v'alav akasav omer, and on Moshe Rabbeinu, the pasuk says, Tov ayin hu yivorach, that Moshe Rabbeinu should be blessed because he was so generous. So the Rishonim debate exactly what is the havamina over here. Is this a sincere havamina that Klal Yisrael is not mitzuva in the mitzvahs in the Torah, that the Torah was given only to Moshe Rabbeinu and not to Klal Yisrael? So some of the Rishonim explain that no, the havamina is that Klal Yisrael would have been commanded to perform the various mitzvahs, but all of the mitzvahs to us would have been like chukim, because we would not have the ability to learn and to really understand the basis behind any of the mitzvahs. What Moshe Rabbeinu gave to us was the gift of the gift of Talmud Torah. So Moshe Rabbeinu gave to us the gift of Talmud Torah so that the mitzvahs which we would have been commanded to perform anyway, and all the laws that we would have been required to abide by anyway, now we can learn about them, we can understand them. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu gave to us. And why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu understood that if it were that all 613 mitzvahs, or however many subcategories of mitzvahs there are, were all to us like chukim, without any rationale and without any understanding, we never would have been able to be mekayim the mitzvah, the mitzvahs. But most explain that the Gemara never really has a serious havamina that the mitzvahs themselves would never have been given to Klal Yisrael. So says the Gemara Vayter. So really, was the Torah really only given to Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu gave it to Klal Yisrael out of his own sense of generosity? But Masav Rav Chista Vosi Tziva Hashem Boisahi Lila Medeschem. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded me to teach you, says Moshe Rabbeinu. So how can you say that Moshe Rabbeinu got the Torah all for himself? We see in Pasuk that Moshe Rabbeinu was commanded to teach the Torah to Klal Yisrael. This says the Gemara, Vosi Tziva, Hashem commanded me to learn the Torah. Va'ani lachem. Not that Hashem commanded me to give it to you. Va'ani, through my own generosity, lachem, I taught you. Gemara raises Akasha from another source. Re'ei limadati eschem chukim u'mishpatim kasher tzivani Hashem elokai. That, behold, I taught to you the chukim u'mishpatim like Hashem commanded me. Doesn't it mean that Hashem commanded me to teach you the chukim u'mishpatim? So says the Gemara, no, same answer. O si tziva v'ani lachem. Hashem commanded me in the chukim u'mishpatim, and I, on my own volition and through my own sense of generosity, gave it over to you. The pasuk then asks, the Gemara rather then asks from the following pasuk, "V'ata kisvu lachem es hashira azos," and now write for yourselves this shira. The havamina of the Gemara being that the shira is a reference to the entire Torah, but we see it's Moshe Rabbeinu saying that, and this is a lashon of commandment. Now go write for yourself the Torah. So says the Gemara, Shira Luchuda. Well, the Shira is one thing, and the Torah is another thing. What Moshe Rabbeinu was commanding Klal Yisrael to write down was only the Shira, not the entire Torah. The Rambam asks, how can this be? We know that you're not allowed to write down only a fragment of the Torah. You're not allowed to write down in a klaf only one of the parshios or one of the chumashim. So how can it be that Moshe Rabbeinu would have commanded Klal Yisrael to write down only one chelek in the Torah if you're not allowed to write the Torah Megillah Megillah? You're not allowed to write the Torah in fragments. So the Shalmei Nedarim is metareitz that the havamina of the Gemara is going only according to the Ma'ad Yamar, who says that the Torah itself was given Megillah Megillah, and it was given Megillah Megillah, was given fragment by fragment, and therefore if the Torah was given Megillah Megillah, then it's allowed to be written Megillah Megillah as well, and therefore the Rambam could explain that the Gemara's Havamina is only according to the Ma'ad Yamar, who says that the Havamin of the Gemara is going only according to the Ma'ad Yamar, who says Megillah Megillah Nitna. The Rambam's Kasha was because he holds that the Torah was Lav Megillah Megillah Nitna. The others explain that the Havamin of the Gemara was that HaKadosh Baruch Hu intended that only Moshe Rabbeinu should be mekabel the entire Torah. So the whole premise of the Kasha, how could Moshe Rabbeinu write down, or how could the Bnei Yisrael be commanded to write down only the Shira, not the entire Torah, assumes that the Shira comprises part of a larger body of work that Klal Yisrael would have been commanded to hold and commanded to keep. That is the situation in which, that's the scenario in which this would actually be considered Megillah Megillah. But if you want to explain that Klal Yisrael wasn't mechuyev in the entire Torah, that the only part of Torah that Klal Yisrael would have been mechuyev to write and to keep was the Shira, then writing the Shira alone wouldn't be considered a Megillah Megillah at all. It wouldn't be considered a fragment of Torah, because as far as Klal Yisrael would have been concerned, in the Havamina, that would have been the entirety of Torah that they were commanded to write down and commanded to keep. So in any event, the Gemara asks, "Ayvata kisvu lochem as hashira zos." So we said, "Hashira luchuda," only the Shira, but not the entire Torah. The entire Torah, in fact, could have been given by Moshe Rabbeinu out of his own generosity. The pasuk then says, "Lamantia li hashira zos le'ed Bivnei Yisrael, so that but the pasuk says that this shira should be an edus to me for the Bnei Yisrael. So what does it mean, an edus to me? So the edus, says the Ran, must refer to the broader Torah that actually contains these covenantal commitments of the Bnei Yisrael. If the shira is an edus on something larger, then it's obvious that Klal Yisrael was commanded on that larger thing. Otherwise, the shira couldn't be an aid on that larger body of the Torah. So says the Gemara, you're right. The Torah was always intended to go to all of Klal Yisrael, and in fact, Moshe Rabbeinu was commanded to teach all of the Torah to Klal Yisrael. So what does it mean when it says that Moshe Rabbeinu gave something to Klal Yisrael out of his own generosity? Ella pilpula di alma. What Moshe Rabbeinu gave to Klal Yisrael out of his own generosity was the koach hapilpul. What's koach hapilpul? To paskan halacha. In other words, to be maven davar mitoch davar. And the Rush explains that what is pilpul. So the Rush says that pilpul, if you look on the right side of the page, it's havana v'charifus, it's an understanding and a sharpness, v'haynu k'savan shalacha. And that's what it meant above in the pasuk that we quoted, that k'savan shalacha. Not that the entire k'siva, that all of the Torah should be yours, but the koach to be mefalpel based on the words of the Torah, based on the osios, that's yours. Ki kolach chachma v'aseichel remuzim b'k'sava Torah b'tzuras osios. There's some type of phenomenal chachma through which you can understand and you can comprehend various concepts by way of the form of the osios. That koach was given to Moshe Rabbeinu alone, and it's that koach hapilpul that Moshe Rabbeinu gave over to Klal Yisrael through his own generosity. The actual Torah, the mitzvahs, that was always intended to be given to all of Klal Yisrael, however. So says the Gemara Vayter. Now is going to discuss the qualifications for being a Navi. So Amar Rav Yochanan, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashra Shechina, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is only Mashra his Shechina, and the Rush just explains, this is Bekvias, the Rush, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu only is Mashra his Shechina on a permanent and on a constant basis. Ella Al Gibar V'asher, a person who's strong, a person who's rich, a person who's chacham, a person who's smart, and a person who's an anav. So just to explain these types of qualities, so chacham and anivas, obviously we understand why they're prerequisites for connecting with the Shekhinah. Why anivas? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't stand in the same world as somebody who's a Baal Gaiva. So we understand in order to connect to the Shekhinah, you have to be an Anav, you have to submit yourself. Also Chachma, because the way we connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is through Torah, and so without Chachma, without this ability, the Koach HaTorah and the Koach HaLimud, we're not able to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Gvura and Ashiras, why are they prerequisites for achieving nevuah and achieving a connection with the Shekhinah? So the Rambam understands that all of these qualities relate really to moral and intellectual qualities, and they're not talking about physical characteristics. That gvura doesn't mean might; it means gvura in terms of moral fortitude that you could withstand all sorts of worldly temptations. And usher, what does usher mean? Usher means that either you're an usher, like they say in Pirkei Avos, or that you're an usher, that you're rich in understanding. It means not monetary ashiras. But the Drosh HaSharan disagrees with the Rambam and says, no, it's obvious that these are physical characteristics, because the Gemara right now is going to ask us, how do we know that Moshe was strong? And the rayas that we're going to bring deal with physical strength. How do we know that Moshe was rich? And the rayas deal with material wealth. So he says, well, the reason that you have to be strong and rich is because you have to be able to beat back opposition. You have to be able to be a strong person and not worry about what other people are thinking of you, not cow to the will of others. And you have to be rich because also you have to be above influence by other people. If you are dependent on other people for your sustenance, you might be influenced by them, and you might not do exactly what's right all the time. So anyway, Machlokas Rishonim, whether these are all physical qualities or whether all of these are moral qualities, or whether some of these are also physical qualities. But in any event, these four qualities that you have to have in order to to be a Navi in order to have the Shechina rest on you. V'kulami Moshe, and all of them are learned from Moshe Rabbeinu. So Gibor, how do we know that Moshe was strong? T'chsev, ayifros asa oel ala Mishkan, that Moshe Rabbeinu spread the oel on the Mishkan. V'amar mar, Moshe Rabbeinu parsa, Moshe Rabbeinu himself spread it. V'chsev, eser amas orecha keresh, and we know that the Mishkan was 10 amas high. So we also know, says the Ran, that ladders are not among the tools mentioned in the building of the Mishkan. And if ladders are not among the tools mentioned in the building of the Mishkan, then obviously there were no ladders. If Moshe Rabbeinu spread the cover on top of the Mishkan, it's obvious that Moshe Rabbeinu was at least 10 amos tall. Says the Ran, Mistamaf, he was very tall, he was also very strong. So says the Gemara, how do you know? Ema d'arch v'katin, maybe he was very tall, but he was also very weak. Ela min adinkra, from this pasuk, t'chsiv, it says, ve'edfos b'shnei luchos v'ashlichem al shtei yadai v'ashabreim, that Moshe Rabbeinu grabbed the luchos, seized them with all his might, threw them on the ground, and he shattered them. And v'tanya, and we know that aluchos archan shisha, they were six tfachim long, v'rachman shisha, six tfachim wide, v'avim and shlosha, and they were three tfachim thick. They were also hewn of solid stone. And so we know that if there was a piece of stone this big, it must have been very heavy. And so when Moshe Rabbeinu threw the luchos to the ground with all of his might in order to shatter them, he must have possessed great strength in order to do that. Others understand that it's not from the fact that he threw them down with all his might, it was from the mere fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to carry them, so that proved that he was very strong. But in any event, we prove from here, Moshe Rabbeinu was a very strong person. Asher, how do we know that he was rich? Psalacha, psalosan shalacha yehe. That psalacha, that the psalos of the luchos belong to Moshe Rabbeinu, that he gets to keep them. Chacham, how do we know he's a chacham? Rav Shmuel Damri Tavayu, chamishim sharei bina nivru b'yolam. There were 50 gates of bina, 50 levels of bina of understanding created in the world. V'chulam nitlu Moshe, chasar achas. And all of them were given to Moshe except for one. Shenemar, as it says, v'tachsareyu ma'at me'elokim. That Moshe Rabbeinu was lacking a little bit from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Mefarshim just point out, it's an interesting use of the word of v'tachsareyu ma'at, because the 50th level of bina is the level of bina that's being used to describe the infinite wisdom of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we're saying that Moshe Rabbeinu was lacking only a little, but that which Moshe Rabbeinu was lacking was the infinite level of bina. So the Mefarshim say the reason that it says Vatechzareya Ma'at is because 1 out of 50, the ratio of 1 to 50, that's only a little. So in other words, if you look at what he was lacking in the context of what he had, just assuming all of them were equal, 1 out of 50, that's a small fraction that he was missing. Of course, that jump to the next Shar Bina would have been infinite in terms of the breadth of Chachma that Moshe Rabbeinu would have had. Anav, how do we know that Moshe Rabbeinu was an Anav? D'chziv v'ish Moshe Anav Ma'od, that Moshe was a tremendous Anav. Moshe Rabbeinu was a tremendous Anav. So the Mefarshim just also explained, and this is a Dafyomi coincidence, that I said when we started this sugya, the Rosh explains that these four qualities are required in order to have a consistent and a permanent connection with the Shechina. It is possible to be misnabe once or twice on a very random basis, even if you don't have these qualities. How do we know? So we know from Bilam, because Bilam, this week's Parsha, was misnabe, all these things. He had this nevuah, but even the Pasuk describes it as a very haphazard, a very impure type of nevuah. Bilam also was a tremendous, tremendous balgaiva. So you can't say that having these qualities is a prerequisite to ever being visited by the Shechina, but it's a prerequisite for a permanent visit or a permanent connection with the Shechina. So says the Gemara Vayter. So Amar Rav Yochanan, Kol Neviim Ashirim Hayu. All of the Neviim were wealthy. So Minola Mi Moshe. How do we know from Moshe Rabbeinu, Mishmuel, Umi Amos, Umi Yona, from these four Neviim? Moshe the Chsiv, Lo Chamor Echad Meam Nasasi, that I didn't take any chamor from you. So Ibelo Igra, if it's referring to the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't take a chamor without paying for it, Lafuke Man the Shalka Belo Igra, was Moshe Rabbeinu saying, oh, I'm such a great guy, I'd never steal any donkeys from you. So Ella Dafilu Be Igra. So no, is what it means is that Moshe Rabbeinu had so much, he never even was in a position where he had to buy a donkey or where he had to pay for the use of a donkey from another member of Klal Yisrael. So Duma Mishum Da'ani, maybe it was because he was an Ani, he didn't have anything to do with a donkey, and that's why he didn't need a donkey. Says the Gemara, We know from the Pasuk of Psalacha that the Psalos of the Luchos belong to Moshe Rabbeinu. Shmuel, how do we know Shmuel was rich? Tichsiv, he hidini anu bi neged Hashem v'neged mishicho, eshar mi lakachti v'chamor li lakachti. That I didn't take a shor from you, I didn't take a chamor from any member of Bnei Yisrael. So ibechinam, if it means that he didn't take anything without paying for it, afukeiman deshakel bechinam, Shmuel is coming to exclude himself from somebody you took for free? Of course, Shmuel's not coming to exclude himself from somebody you would go rip something off from somebody else for free. Ella dafilu b'schar. What it means is that he didn't even pay somebody. He didn't even rent a donkey or a shor from anybody. Dilma d'anihu. Maybe it was because he was an ani and he didn't have any use for these animals. So ella me'acha. We learn it from the following pasuk. Uchivaso aramasa ki sham beso. The Ron explains that wherever Shmuel would convene a basin to judge Klal Yisrael, he would have a house, meaning he had a primary residence and a summer residence and a residence in Florida and a residence everywhere. He would have a bunch of different houses. So Shmuel was obviously very wealthy. V'amar Rava, just Rava points out that Kol Makom Shalach Beisu Imo, he always had a residence in every city where he would set up camp. So Amar Rava, Gadol Mashenemar B'Shmuel Yoser Mashenemar B'Moshe. The wealth that the pasuk conveys by Shmuel is greater than the wealth that the pasuk conveys by Moshe. How do we know? Dilu B'Moshe Rabbeinu Chsev Lo Chamar Echad Me'am Nasasi Dafilu B'Schar. Moshe by Moshe Rabbeinu, he says that I didn't even appropriate an animal from you with schar. So what does it mean, nasasi? Nasasi means to take by force. What Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, I didn't even take by force an animal from you with paying. So in other words, you could pay for something, but the transaction is not a totally consensual transaction. What Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, I didn't even force you to loan me your donkey, force me to rent me your donkey by paying you. However, by Shmuel, it says that nobody, even on a totally voluntary basis, gave him their donkey. You do not rob us, and you do not induce our consent. In other words, you never took anything from us, even on a fully consensual basis. Amos, how do we know that Amos was wealthy? Amos said to Amatzia, Lo Navi Anochi, Lo Ben Navi Anochi, I'm not a Navi, I'm not a Ben Navi, Kiboker Anochi, I'm a cattle herder, Uboles Shkamim, and I'm an examiner of sycamore trees. Kibdimatargim, Rav Yosef, like Rav Yosef explains, don't think that when he said he's a cattle herder, he means it literally. Ari Mari Gitiana. I'm the owner of the cattle, not that I'm a herder, not that I'm a shepherd, but I actually own all the cattle. Ushkamim li b'shiflasa, and that I own plains full of sycamore trees. It's not that I examine them and I'm a hired hand, I actually own all of this property. So he was a very large property owner. And that's how we know that Amos was rich. Yona d'chsiv, v'yitin schara v'yiridba, that Yona paid the schar for the ship, and he went on the ship. This is when he was going to Nineveh. V'amar Rav Yochanan, sh'nasan schara shel sfina kula, that Yona, when it says that he paid for the boat, it doesn't mean that he paid his fare, it means he chartered a private boat, he chartered a yacht. So Amar Rav Rumnes, and scharan shel sfina havi dalar alafim dinar edava, just know that the fee for chartering a private boat, or for chartering an entire boat at the time, was 4,000 dinar of gold. So it was an exorbitant sum of money. Initially, Moshe Rabbeinu would learn Torah and forget it. Until HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it to him as a matana. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses the word vayitin, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu as a gift. So the Balei Musar obviously learned from here as an inspiration that if a person is learning and is not being successful at first, not to give up and not to be discouraged, because even Moshe Rabbeinu, when he was learning, without a siyata d'shmaya, without an understanding that whatever it was going to come as a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he himself would forget it. So once you approach with the mindset that whatever you're getting is a gift, it's a little bit easier to retain the knowledge, and it's also a lot easier to avoid being discouraged when you're not getting it. If you realize that everything is a gift, not necessarily a result of your own intellectual shortcoming, if you're not understanding something initially. Good. So that concludes this discussion. Now back to regular Nedarim sugyas. So again, we had been learning over the past couple of days Mishnayos describing various things that if Reuven says that Shimon is not allowed to have anah from him, various things that Reuven is still permitted to do on behalf of Shimon, on Shimon's behalf. So says the Mishnah, Vizon es ishto ves banav, and he can support his wife and kids, v'afal pi shu chayev b'mizono sayen. Even though Shimon is chayev to support his own wife and kids, Reuven can go and support Shimon's wife and kids. Shimon could go support his wife and kids for him. So why? So Tosfos explains that this Mishnah is going like Chanan, like the Sheet of Chanan that we saw many times over the past few days, where Chanan said that Azan es eshes chaveiro, if a person supports his friend's wife, then heniach mosav al keren atzvi, then he's never entitled to be paid back. Because what he's doing is basically throwing out his money. So in other words, it's not that he's basically losing his money, and therefore this is considered to be according to Chanan an indirect benefit, right? Because and in other words, it would be a problem if he were doing something and then something that he was able to demand payment for. And then he was mochel on the payment, that would be a real hana. However, over here, he's doing something and it's considered to be that he's throwing his money out the window. He's not entitled to repayment, so if he's mochel, big deal, because he's not entitled to repayment anyway. And the hana that the Shimon is getting, that the Mudar is getting when Reuven supports his kids, that's only an indirect hana because it defers his own payment obligation. He's not actually getting anything tangible. Tosfa says, in the alternative, we can understand that this Mishnah is going even according to the Chachamim, and how could it be going according to the Chachamim? The Chachamim said that he's entitled to get money back, and if he's entitled to get money back, and he's going to be mochel on the money, that's a hana. So ordinarily he's entitled to get money back. But we might be dealing with a case where Reuven supported Shimon's wife and kids b'toras matana and not or l'shei mitzvah and not b'toras piron. So Tosfa says that this Mishnah could be going either according to Chanan or according to the Chachamim. Tosfa the Rishonim also pick up the Meiri and the Rosh also pick up on this on the word of the Mishnah where it says zones ishtov es banav. Even though he's chayev to support them. So the Rishonim debate, is it really true that you're chayev to support your kids? Certainly your wife you're chayev to support, but is it true that you're chayev to support your kids? So the Rishonim say, yeah, it is true in certain circumstances. Either if your kids are very little, you're chayev to support them. Or we might be talking about a case where a woman was married to a guy, had a kid, they got divorced, and then they got remarried on the condition that the guy support the woman's kid. So we could construct a case where he was mechuyev to support the kids. Now, velo yozen es behemto bein tmeah bein tora. Back in the Mishnah, you are not allowed to feed the guy's animal, whether it's a behemah tmeah or a behemah tora. Rabbi Eliezer omer zonis atmeah vein zonis atar. That you can feed his behemah tmeah, but you cannot feed his behemah tora. What's the basis for the distinction? So amar lo ma bein tmeah le tora. So amar lehu. So he said to them, shatora. Because by the Tahora, the nefesh of the animal belongs to Shemayim, but this is the key, the guf belongs to him. What does it mean the guf belongs to him? It's a behemah Torah, so he could check that and he could eat it. Therefore, the fatter the animal gets, he's benefiting because he could eat the meat or he could sell the meat, he could do something with it. So if you are feeding his animal, you're giving him a tangible benefit. The Tmeya, however, by Bebe Tmeya, flipping over to Lamechesim Abeis, Nafsha V'gufa La Shamayim, both the Nefesh and the Guf of the Behema are to Shamayim. So the Ron just explains over here, when Rabbi Lezer says that it's permitted to feed the Behema Tmeya, very important to explain, he's not referring to the basic sustenance of the animal. The basic sustenance of the animal, you're not allowed to feed. Why? Because the animal, the behemah tmeah, is around for the guy to work for the guy. So if you're providing the animal with basic sustenance, you are benefiting him because so long as the animal eats, he's able to work. The animal's able to work. What Rav Elazar is talking about is feeding the animal, plying the animal with food above and beyond the basic food that's required to sustain the animal. By a behemah tahora, the fatter the animal gets, the better off he is, because there's more meat on the animal. By a behemah tmeah, the fatter off the animal gets, the worse off he is, because a fat animal is going to be a lazy animal, it's not going to work as hard. So that's what the Ron explains. So important to qualify the type of food that Rabbi Lezer says you're allowed to give the animal. So Amar Lohu, so Amar Lo, so the Chacham said to Rabbi Lezer, Afatmeya nafshe lo shamayim v'gupa shalo, even by Matmeya he benefits. Why? Shem yirtzeh harei umokhor lov de Chachamim v'machil l'chavim. Because if he wants, he could sell the animal to a guy, and the guy will pay more if the animal's fatter, or he could give it to the dogs, and it'll feed more dogs if the animal is fatter. So you're not allowed to give the animal, you're not allowed to feed Shimon's animals in any case. Says the Gemara, so Amar Rav Yitzchak bar Chananya, Amar Rav Huna, Hamodur ano mechaveiro, if a person is modur ano from his friend, mutur lahasi lo asbito, it's mutur to marry off your daughter to him. So havi ba Rav Zeira, but my askina, what case are we talking about? Ilema b'shenichse aviakala, Asurin ala chasan. If we're talking about a case where Reuven has a daughter and Reuven says, Shimon is not allowed to have anah from me. And we're talking about a case where Reuven's marrying his daughter off to Shimon, hare moser lo shivcha l'shamsho. But when you marry off your daughter to somebody, then typically if your daughter is a ketana, you also give over a shivcha with the daughter. And if you are marrying your daughter off to Shimon, who's the mudur anah, and you're giving over a shivcha with the daughter, then you're giving Shimon a shivcha. So how could that be mutter? So ela b'nichsei chasan asurin ala viyakala. We're talking about where the nechasim of the chasan are usher on the aviyakala, and the chiddush is that it's not considered to be a benefit to the aviyakala that the chasan is supporting his daughter. It says the Gemara, hello, of course it's not a benefit. Gdola mizu amru. Zonas ishtov ez banav, afal pishu chai bimizonosan. If you have a guy who's usher bahana, if you have a guy who's usher to have anah from you, the mother is even allowed to feed your own wife and daughter. So certainly if the mother is allowed to feed your own wife and daughter when they're not married to him, you're allowed to give your daughter over to the guy to marriage, and we're not afraid that he's going to benefit you by feeding your daughter. He's allowed to feed your daughter in any event, says the Gemara. It's not a chiddush. Sabaat amrit mutar lahasi lo bito, it's pashut. So says the Gemara, li'olam b'shenichse aviyakala asurin ala chasan. Really, we're talking about a case where the nichse aviyakala are usher on the chasan. What about giving over a maidservant? We're talking about pabita bogeres umidaita. We're talking about where the daughter is, a bogeres. She's no longer a nara, and when she's no longer a naira, two things. Number one, the father can't give her over in nisuin, and the father also doesn't give over a shivcha with her. Umidaita. That's why the Gemara says, really, it's her. She is entering the marriage on her own volition. And the chiddush here is that advising her to marry the chasan isn't considered to be a hanah to the chasan, if the chasan is not allowed to have hanah from the avi akala. The Ran says, let's just be careful, this is only where the chasan doesn't ask the avi akala to intercede. If the chasan, however, asks the avi akala to intercede on his behalf and convince his daughter to marry him, then if the avi akala actually does so, that will be considered to be a shlichus. And if that's a shlichus, then, as we've seen in previous days, a shlichus is considered to be, performance of a shlichus is considered to be a tangible benefit. Tanya nami hachi, hamodur ana mechaveiro, if a person is modur ana from his friend, asur lasi lo bita, you're not allowed to marry off your daughter to him. Why? Because if it's a bita oktana then, or a bita nara, then you're marrying the daughter off, you're giving the daughter over, plus you're giving the shivcha. But you are allowed to give over the bito bogeres umidaita if she's going over on her own volition. Let's try to get a little bit weiter. So Amar Rav Yaakov, a madr b'no l'tam Torah. If a person is madr b'no l'tam Torah, so most mefarshim explain that what this means is that his son is learning and he's shtagging in yeshiva, so he takes a neder that he's not going to have anah from his son, so that his son can focus on learning Torah. Mutter l'malas l'chavish shalmayim. It's mutter, nevertheless, for his son to fill up a pitcher of water for him, ulahadlik lo asaner, and to light a little candle for him. Rav Yitzchak Amar litzlos odag katan, even to roast for him a little fish. So the chiddush over here is that these types of really, really minor hana is not considered to be included in his neder. Why? Because after all, the whole reason that the guy made a neder is so that his son should be able to focus on learning Torah. What he didn't want to do was he didn't want to take his son's focus away and make his son preoccupied with serving the father. If, however, it's only only this little minor anah that doesn't take too much effort, then it's going to be okay. So let's stop here. We'll pick up from here with this discussion tomorrow, because there's a lot more to discuss here. I'd hope to finish until the Mishnah, but tomorrow is a much shorter daf, so we should be okay.